There's no doubt about it. The land and the water around the Central Coast affords us the most spectacular and accessible land perhaps in the world. Among other things, the land affords us major recreational opportunities. And many of us believe that preservation and expansion of those opportunities should be a high priority. So while taking a walking tour up to the Avila Lighthouse a few months ago, I heard something about something called Wild Cherry Canyon. My ears really perked up. It sounded fantastic. And the name Blakeslee was associated with the project. So when I had a chance to sit down and talk on the air with Senator Sam Blakeslee a month or so ago, I asked him about Wild Cherry Canyon. And his response was, "You better talk to my wife. That's her priority." So today I'm following that advice. My guest is Kara Blakeslee. She's one of the people spearheading the initiative called Wild Cherry Canyon. Kara, welcome to KCBX's Issues and Ideas.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
All right. Now, I've been kind of vague about this, so let's be more specific. What is the Wild Cherry Canyon Project?
Wild Cherry Canyon is a local piece of land that's just so pretty. And the way we frame the project is it's not so much a new conservation project as an extension to Montana de Oro. So everybody around here knows about Montana de Oro.
Sure.
But there's a 2,400-acre parcel that we have the option to purchase, which would connect Montana de Oro all the way down to Avila Beach if we're successful. So it's a really neat project, very beautiful, and we hope to put it all together soon.
Give us kind of a verbal picture of all the pieces in there, because it isn't just Wild Cherry Canyon and Montana de Oro. There are other pieces in this, and of course there's the nuclear reactor, the PG&E facility. And so if we don't have a map on the radio, give us a verbal picture.
Yeah, well, I'd love to give you a verbal picture. But what you can also do is check out the American Land Conservancy website, and I'll tell you more about that later. It has some great maps on there. But picture about 2,400 acres of rolling hills and coast live oak and beautiful wildflowers during the right season. And it's property that begins right between Avila Beach and Port San Luis. And that's the gateway. That's the 2,400 acres. If we acquire that piece, at the same time, another property adjacent to that, which is called the Hibbard Preserve, would also transfer to state parks as another extension to this Montana de Oro Park. So together, they make about 4,000 acres. Plus, between those two properties and the existing borders of Montana de Oro are little pieces that have been acquired along the way through the Irish Hills, such that if Wild Cherry Canyon is successful, you can start your hike in the morning and walk about 20 miles and eventually end up in Morro Bay without reaching a public roadway.
Wow.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, that was what really caught my attention. Now, who owns the Wild Cherry Canyon right now?
That is a very complicated question, interestingly enough. There's really two parts to the ownership, and that's why this project really is so complex and difficult. The property, as we think of property, all the rights that go along with ownership of a property, is really held by a local development group. And they don't really have the ownership per se. They have long-term leaseholds that govern all uses of the property for about another 160 years. But in this unusual case, there is also an owner of the underlying fee title, so that after the 160 years pass, those leases will lapse, and then the property will revert to the underlying fee title owners, and that is owned by PG&E.
Oh. Now, but what gives the current leaseholders an incentive to want to sell it rather than to develop it and reap benefits continually from it?
It's a great question, and probably you'd have to talk to the leaseholders as to their motivation, but I think this is an opportunity for them to transfer the property to a nonprofit and be part of a really great project, but they're compensated at full market value too. So they stand to gain a pretty penny if this project goes through.
So they would, in effect, give up their leasehold.
They would sell their leaseholds.
And what would happen to the ownership of the underlying owner then?
Well, this project, as far as we're concerned, has two parts. We have to acquire the leaseholds for a purchase price of over $21 million, and then we also have to acquire the underlying fee title from PG&E. Both interests have to be acquired and transferred to the state, because the state said early on they really liked the idea of expanding Montana de Oro. This was a fabulous piece of property, great scenic, recreational, ecological value, but they didn't want to acquire just the leaseholds because they didn't want it to revert away from parks in 160 years. So as a requirement of the deal, we have to get both pieces of the land interest, the lease and the fee title.
And that's going to amount to?
Well, the total purchase price is $21 million, but its appraised value is all attributed to the leaseholds. The fee title does not have any present value because its interests are so far off in time.
I see. Oh, interesting. Cara Blakeslee is our guest on Issues and Ideas, and we're talking about Wild Cherry Canyon. So you envision someday, if you're successful in purchasing this thing, of actually having Montana de Oro State Park extend all the way to Avila.
All the way to Avila. So you wake up in the morning at Avila, have a great breakfast perhaps, get on a bike, or maybe you hike or get on a horse. Perhaps you go halfway, spend the night, wake up the next day in Morro Bay. It could be a really terrific asset for the community.
I'll be darned. Now, everybody knows that the state parks are in rather impoverished shape
today.
Yes,
they are.
Does that affect your calculus at all?
Well, it has to. This is a pretty crummy time, frankly, to acquire any parkland. We are aware of that. Mm-hmm. But we have to take a long-term view that has a little vision. I mean, true, you don't want to acquire property that the state can't afford to manage or that they can't even open right now. But we have a really unique chance here. It's not every day that in California you can find 4,000 acres that can be acquired and below market value at that. We have a willing landowner that's willing to transfer the property away. And of the $21 million purchase price, we have already raised every single penny except for one piece, and that's the piece that comes from state parks. It's $6.9 million, but that money can only be spent on conservation per state law, and it can only be spent in the Irish Hills, this very tiny region of the state. So it can't be used to fund teachers and firefighters and some of these wonderful things that we need to do for the state. It can only be spent right here in the Irish Hills. So if we don't spend the money, it doesn't benefit any other programs. So I think we have to say, well, maybe right now we acquire the property. Maybe we have to put a gate and close it for a while. But when we can afford to manage it, and it's worth it now to take the chance to acquire what we have this opportunity.
So the money that is already committed, the state parks money is already set aside, can't be spent anywhere else.
Correct.
But they still would have to manage the property, and that's what might take some time for them to get the funding to do that.
They're right. And the state parks has a few options, but I have some very new news to report. Yeah. We've had trouble scheduling the last two hearing dates that would really complete the deal. We have to go before the Public Works Board two times. And for some reason, they haven't scheduled it. And I think that's in large part because of this management issue. We have just heard...
No, it's the State Parks Board?
It's not the State Parks Board. In this case, when you spend state parks money, the money has to be allocated through a board called the Public Works Board.
Okay.
So they kind of act for state parks in accepting the property. We haven't been able to schedule that hearing, and there's an interesting, colorful history behind that. I won't go into too much detail now. But the long story is we have just heard from the state that they would be willing to proceed with the project if we're able to raise a management endowment. That's brand new news.
Oh, a management
endowment. Yes.
What is it and how much is it?
Well, what it is it acquiring the property is the first step, and of course, we're very close to doing that. The big issue is how do we manage it after we acquire it? And so there's a couple of options that Parks has. Number one, I think we can probably expect a kiosk so that when you go into the park, you arrive at the gate, you have to pay an entrance fee. And that fee will cover the cost of, in part, covering operations, hiring rangers, maybe developing campsites, etc. But what Parks also is going to want is some money that will be set aside that will generate some income that can be used for ongoing management purposes into the future. So it looks like we are going to not only have to raise this $21 million, but we'll probably have to raise another $1 million that will be used solely for management costs for the park.
Interesting.
It's a big amount of money to raise, but we're just about ready to dive in and do it.
Now, let me see if I understand this. You already have the $21 million?
Well, every bit of the $21 million, except for $6.9 million, has already been raised by other sources, other agencies, already been allocated officially, and it sits in the bank.
All right.
So that's ready to go.
Right.
We have one last piece, $6.9 million, that has to be approved by the Public Works Board.
Okay. It has to be approved by the public.
Yes.
It's in hand? Or no,
well,
they're going to disperse it.
Exactly. So it's money that was conservation bond money, has to be used in the Irish Hills, but you still have to go through the formal administrative step of allocating it towards the acquisition of this project.
I see. And then in addition to that, that's more of a I wouldn't say political, but the money's there. The board has to be persuaded this is a prudent use of the money and a timely use of the money.
Exactly. It has to be put on the agenda, and then the board has to vote yes or no.
And then in addition to that, for an additional $1 million, you can get the thing up and operating because—
Well, I think what they're saying is they don't really want to put it on the agenda until we raise the endowment money. So I think what we're hearing is— You guys raise the money, show us that there's an endowment out there for management, and when we see that in place, we'll put it on the agenda and move it forward.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, just step back from this for a second. What got you interested in this project? Are you outdoors people?
Aren't we all in San Luis Obispo County outdoors people?
If we're not, we shouldn't be here, I suppose. But
I first started working on this project. As I say, I have my older daughter is now a driver. But when I first started getting involved on Wild Cherry Canyon, she was 3 years old. So I started in 1999 was an employee for the Nature Conservancy. Worked on the project for a few years. I then left the Nature Conservancy to work for the American Land Conservancy on the Hearst Ranch project. And I left this project behind. For whatever reason, the Nature Conservancy and the leaseholders didn't work it out and the project didn't come together. So it's been kind of on and off for a number of years. But myself and others at American Land Conservancy have been actively engaged on this project for about the last 5 or 6 years. And in this case, I've been just serving as a volunteer.
How do you raise money? I mean, how does the American Land Conservancy persuade people to put up that kind of money?
Well, it comes from all sorts of different sources. So we've been very creative. You know, we've had people buy Jamba Juices and donate part of the proceeds to the project. We've gone to California Pizza Kitchen. We've had a lot of small local fundraisers and raise it, you know, $20 at a time. But the big money has come from various state agencies, and we've been to a lot of them. So part of the money is coming from Caltrans, the State Coastal Conservancy, the Wildlife Conservation Board. We have a grant from a wonderful local foundation, Hine Foundation, which gave us a very generous grant. In fact, the Hine Foundation was really important because when we started the fundraising effort, we had no money in the bank. And we went to Greg Hine and asked him to help us out. And he gave us that first large check, which was great seed money. And it really motivated us to continue on. So we've come a long way.
And that Hine Foundation has done some marvelous things in this community.
Have helped out in so many ways. They've been a great donor to the Land Conservancy locally. They've done a lot of wonderful projects, and they certainly helped us here.
We're talking with Kara Blakeslee, who is, I guess, the umbrella organization that you're working with is?
American Land Conservancy. So they're a nonprofit conservation group, and also the group that was responsible for the completion of the Hearst Ranch project.
And now, how does that relate to the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo?
They have similar missions. They're both in existence to protect natural systems, recreational areas, scenic areas, land for people and wildlife. In the case of American Land Conservancy, they have projects all over the United States. The Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County has projects primarily based in this county.
I see. And so you're wearing the American Land Conservancy. Although, as I understand it, one of the parcels of land in this attempt to amalgamate the land with Wild Cherry Canyon and whatnot is owned by the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo.
Absolutely, and that's the Hibbard Preserve. The Hibbard Preserve is a beautiful property, about 1,500 acres directly north of Wild Cherry Canyon, but it's landlocked. So the Land Conservancy has this terrific property, but they don't have good access to it. So Wild Cherry Canyon not only enables access to that new property, it also gives you access to the Land Conservancy's Hibbard Preserve, and the local Land Conservancy is willing to transfer the property for very low cost, barely even covering their costs on the property, to the state. Mm-hmm. So the state has to pay for the leaseholds, but get the underlying fee title for no cost. They also get the Hibbard Preserve for an absolute song. And there's also another number of pieces between Hibbard and the existing Montana d'Or that have been acquired and passed by other conservation organizations.
Yeah, I looked at the map, and it actually is it looks like a jigsaw puzzle.
It's a patchwork.
All, of all the pieces, but you can see if all the pieces are connected, that you've got a connection between Montana d'Oro and Avila Beach.
Right, and a new extension to the California Coastal Trail of probably over 20 miles by the time you get it down on the ground and go here, there, and everywhere.
I heard, I read about the California Coastal Trail, but that's the first time I'd ever heard about the California Coastal Trail. Is it in existence, and where does it go?
Oh, very much. Well, it's a dream, and in some ways it's very much reality. So the goal of the California Coastal Trail, and there's a lot of people who have spent their lifetimes on developing the trail, but the goal is to have a continuous trail from Mexico to Canada, and at least through the state of California. That's the California portion. And there are many parts of the state where you have good long trails near the coast where you can travel. But then there's other places where you reach a dead end. And one of those dead ends is Irish Hills. So you can, north of the Irish Hills, north of Morro Bay, there are a lot of segments of the trail that are available. You can walk down the beaches, or there might be coastal trails. Like Hearst Ranch, for example, opened up another 20 miles of coastal trail. But you can't get past Montana d'Oro to the south, in part because the power plant is directly south, but you can't even go inland because there's not that connection to get out, and that's what Wild Cherry Canyon would achieve.
So let's speak about the power plant. It's sort of the elephant in the room. Does that inhibit you at all because of the atomic power plant right there? Does it inhibit you at all from what can be done, how much it can encroach on the activities of the PG&E facility or at all?
Not really. The Coastal Trail is not going to go anywhere near the plant. I mean, if you look at that map I referred to on the American Land Conservancy website, you'll see that the trail connection will be quite a bit inland from the plant itself. Mm-hmm. So people will be some 4+ miles away from the plant if they go on the trail. So no, the plant does not really impair the park. In fact, I think one of the reasons that historically PG&E has been supportive of this project and wanted to be involved is that they already have state parks as an immediate neighbor to the north. They work well with state parks. They've had a great relationship, mutually beneficial. So adding Wild Cherry Canyon to the south of them is a very known entity. It's the same people. It's the same park personnel. It's the same supervisor, Nick Franco. So they know that neighbor. They work very well with that neighbor. If the property were to end up in some other hands, maybe it were developed, I think PG&E would acquire many new neighbors that may not share an enthusiasm for the plant operations and the way the park has been very friendly with the operations, and they work well together. So I think PG&E stands to gain from this turning into a park because they're going to be working with familiar partners.
I don't know the name. I should, since I've walked it, but from Montana d'Oro, there is a hiking trail that goes along the coast that requires you to go through an entrance gate, actually. So it's a controlled entrance, doesn't cost anything, but you need to go through it. Now, is that parcel of land, and the name escapes me,
I think,
right
they call it the Fields Ranch, if I'm not mistaken, to the north of the plant.
Yeah, but there's a hiking trail that goes along the coast from basically what I think of as the end of Montana d'Oro, and it goes beyond that. Is that part of what you see of as the 20-mile trail?
Not really. Probably the trail goes a little bit to the east of that.
Oh.
So that trail that you can occasionally go on, and it's cooperatively managed by the plant, you probably would still have access to that trail, but according to the schedule and the management style of who's doing that today. This particular trail would be a little bit east and north of that, but you could still get to Montana d'Oro, but you'd be coming a little bit further from the east to do so.
I wish I could think of the name of that, and neither of us can, obviously.
I can't think of it either. I'm sorry.
But Wild Cherry Canyon, so you've got $1 million or so to raise.
We do.
And how do you propose to do that?
Well, that's going to be tricky. But I would say failure is no option. We have to make this work. And I don't know exactly where the money's come from, but uh-huh. we are going to give it everything we have. Uh-huh. I mean, there have been a lot of people that I'm working on this project for a long time, and we're certainly not going to let $1 million endowment get in the way after raising what will soon be $21 million for the acquisition. So we will look and ask foundations for help. We'll look for private donations. Who knows? Maybe we'll have a garage sale. We will look for state agencies. Agency assistance. It will be a challenge because raising acquisition money is always easier than raising management money. People love the idea of paying for something that they can touch and feel and experience. Right. It's not nearly as interesting to pay for something that's going to help cover salaries for park rangers, but we're going to get past that. We're going to raise this money and we're going to make this project work. There's no option.
Is there a commercial angle, perhaps? Some commercial organization that might be able to take some advantage of that and provide a portion or all the money?
I think that's a great question. I hope the answer is yes. I mean, there have been a lot of ideas that have been thrown out there, and we've just begun to have some internal meetings about how do we tackle this management endowment issue. But there's a couple of options. The town of Avila Beach stands to gain a lot from this new southern entrance to Montana de Oro.
Yes.
Certainly, it will attract tourists. Certainly, those people are going to want to have lunch or breakfast or maybe go shopping in the town of Avila. So there's been a discussion about perhaps some of the hotels would be willing to ask for a voluntary fee for the people that are spending the night to help cover management costs. So that's one idea we're thinking about. Mm-hmm. Also, parks has become very, very creative in recent years because there have been, you know, year after year threat to close state parks. They've come up with alternative funding mechanisms, which we think are pretty intriguing. So the obvious answer is a fee. When you walk up and you want to go visit the park, you pay a fee. Or if you want to camp, you pay a little bit more. Maybe they can even have in concessionaires, people who would be willing to offer something to the public for a fee, like maybe a horseback riding concessionaire, or maybe even some kind of food and beverage service. There's also been some talk of perhaps leasing some of the land like they do today for cattle a few times during the appropriate seasons of the year and, you know, and consistent with people's use of the property for recreational purposes. But there's a whole host of things that we would consider to help fund this endowment.
While you were talking, it seemed to me that isn't there some concern about the impact of this project when it comes to fruition on Avila Bay. I'm thinking, where would people park? Right now, on a Saturday or a Sunday, that road is completely parked up already.
Well, the nice thing about this property is that parking wouldn't be an issue. If you go to the gate, which is currently there, and it's about halfway between Avila Beach and Port San Luis, behind the gate where they have the lighthouse tours that are staged, there is some flat land.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, although you don't know exactly what form the park will take, there's a good chance that they would build a parking lot right there at the entrance. So I don't envision people having to park on the road and blocking traffic. I think all the parking could be accommodated right on the property itself. There's a nice flat area as you enter the land.
Yeah, and on the weekends they have those shuttle buses or shuttle trolleys that go up to the lighthouse.
Exactly, and if you remember during the Avila cleanup, the yacht club parked their yacht club building right there by the gate, too. So there is some area, and I think a parking lot would be well-placed right there. So I don't think parking will be an issue, per se.
Well, it does seem to me that there is a commercial advantage to the town of Avila having this up and operating. You can always use more tourists. You can always use more people coming through town.
Oh, there's no doubt. There have been a few people that have looked at the fiscal impact of having state parks in a community, and it's very significant. There's no doubt that Morro Bay and Los Osos benefit by Montana de Oro, and certainly the same thing would be true. And I think that's why the Avila Valley Advisory Council have been a strong public supporter of this project for years now. And whenever we've gone to hearings to ask for money for the project, they've always written letters of support because they understand it is a wonderful way to bring tourists to the area in a way that's actually quite low impact on the resources there.
Who's against it?
I don't know of anybody who's against it per se.
Really? Oh, come
well,
on.
I think probably there's a generic mumbling and grumbling about what are we doing opening up parks at this time when we're closing others. And I get that argument. So I would say that's probably the opposition is just it's a difficult time to imagine building a new park when state parks have faced such difficult times. So that's probably the only opposition I hear, but there's no organized group. And in these hearings we've had, I've never seen a letter that was written in opposition. I can't recall anybody standing up and saying they were against the idea. I think it's more skepticism about the timing more than opposition to the project per se.
And how many people like yourself are involved in, I guess it would be like a steering committee or something like that in this operation?
Well, I think conservation, it's not something that anybody has a whole lot of money or time for. But I would say the project has been driven by primarily the local community. So every time we have to go before an agency, I have dozens, if not hundreds, of individuals who show up at the hearings, write letters. A lot of the local nonprofits have been particularly supportive. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like an army of local people who really see the benefits to the local community. That's been the energy behind the project. And of course, on the administrative legal side, it's been American Land Conservancy and people that are working out of San Francisco.
Any conflict with the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo, two organizations kind of operating in the same venue?
No. I could not say more positive things about the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County. They have a fabulous staff. They have so much integrity. They've done just great work here locally, and they've been nothing but supportive of this project. In fact, the Hibbard Preserve, as I've mentioned a few times before, they own that property. But because they understand the public benefit by moving this to state parks, they have volunteered to transfer Hibbard Preserve to the state for a song, just because it's the right thing to do. So, no, I don't feel like there's competition. In fact, the organizations have worked really well together. And I think Bob Hill and his employees, they have a really terrific team.
Are there any other parcels in this whole area, because there are a lot of them, that are any concern about them being part of the package?
We don't need anything other than Wild Cherry Canyon and the Hibbard Preserve, which is a donation, to make the trail connect. So there are some other pieces in the Irish Hills that could be of interest to add to the park. And if those landowners step forward and want to sell, we would certainly discuss that with them. But Wild Cherry Canyon is the critical piece to complete the trail in this region and to put the whole park together.
I think it's a marvelous project. As I said at the outset, it really captured my imagination. A 20-mile hiking trail is, my gosh, you know, I could see all sorts of possibilities there. I could see little camps along the way, so you could do it in 2 days or 3 days, and it could be a heck of a thing. All right. I want to find out more. How do I find out more?
Okay, there's two ways. The first way and the easiest way is check out the website for American Land Conservancy, and the website is www.alcnet.org.
ALCNET.org.
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 And when you go to that website, there is a link to Wild Cherry Canyon. If you click that link, you'll learn about all the project supporters, where we have come for funding. You'll see maps. You'll see photographs. So that's the first way, just a wealth of information. Also, some newspaper articles. Just as much as you would want to know about the project is available right there at your computer. The other thing is if people had specific questions, they wanted to know more, they wanted to help out, they wanted to help us, want to donate to the endowment, they can simply send me an email, and I will give them all the information they need.
Email address.
KaraSlo@charter.net, KaraSlo at charter.net.
Kara Blakeslee, I want to thank you very much for sharing with us about Wild Cherry Canyon. It's fascinating. It's a great project. I wish you the very best of luck.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Larry.
This is Larry Rutter, and this is Issues and Ideas on KCBX.